Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Hello, everyone. This is your host, Lori Boyer. On this week's Walnut Wednesday, California Walnut Board's Jennifer Williams previews the upcoming California Walnut Conference and will get a report about new potato trial results and promising varieties. That is all just ahead here on the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'll start off with regional news right after this.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
In regional agricultural news today, Taylor Farms was recognized as Walmart's 2022 Supplier of the Year within the food category, announced at the 2022 Walmart Supplier Growth Forum. The recognition shines a light on Taylor Farms' role as a consistent top performer and supplier within Walmart's produce and deli sectors. Mark Campion, president of Taylor Farms Retail Group, says they are extremely honored to receive this recognition from their long-standing partner, referring to Walmart. He says their strong partnership with Walmart spans across 20 years and is rooted in the mutual goal of delivering healthy, fresh foods to consumers across North America. He says they look forward to continuing to help consumers live happier and healthier lives. While receiving this award, the Taylor Farms team was acknowledged for the production shifts that were swiftly implemented across numerous facilities to ensure store shelves were full of the fresh foods that consumers want and need. Taylor Farms is a leading North American producer of salads and healthy fresh foods with production facilities across the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Taylor Farms is family-owned and based in the salad bowl of the world, which is Salinas, California. The Save Mart Companies announced that Kingswood Capital Management LP has acquired the company. Kingswood is an operationally focused private equity firm based in Los Angeles with significant experience in the retail sector. Terms of the transaction were not disclosed. Headquartered in Modesto, California, the Save Mart Companies is committed to sourcing a wide variety of local products across approximately 200 stores and serves communities throughout California and northern Nevada. The company operates stores under the banners of Save Mart, Lucky California, and Food Max. In addition to its retail operation, the company also operates Smart Refrigerated Transport and is a partner in Superstore Industries, which owns and operates a distribution center in Lathrop and a Sunnyside Farms dairy processing plant in Turlock. With the addition of the Save Mart companies, Kingswood is expanding its existing Northern California presence. It already owns Alameda-based Cost Plus World Market, which it acquired in January of 2021 from Bed Bath & Beyond, and Mare Island, based in Lind Marine, a diversified marine services business headquartered north of the San Francisco Bay, which it recapitalized in January of 2022. As the industry celebrates National Farm Worker Awareness Week, Homegrown Organic Farms is pleased to announce its Northwest Organic Blueberry Farms in Oregon have earned Equitable Food Initiative certification. The farms join Homegrown Organic Farms' Stone Fruit Program, which became EFI certified in 2020, further demonstrating the company's dedication to its employees and associates. As a newly formed ESOP, Homegrown has partnered with its sister company to achieve and roll out this new certification. The Equitable Food Initiative is a certification process designed to develop partnerships between the farm working employees and farm management teams. These partnerships help to create a trusting work environment while improving overall working conditions, cultivating confidence and teamwork between farm workers and management, and building a culture of commitment and collaboration. Kevin Boyle, Director of New Product and Business Development for Equitable Food Initiative, commented that it is fitting they would receive notice of Homegrown's Oregon operations earning EFI certification during Farm Worker Awareness Week.
The California Walnut Conference is back. Mark your calendars for April 7th and 8th at the Yuba Center Fairgrounds. This growing event has become the gem of Northern California Ag and brings walnut industry professionals together from across the Golden State. Be part of the experience and learn about new technologies, research, and meet with other ag insiders at the premier walnut conference in California. Register today at wcngg.com/events. The California Walnut Conference is powered by your top news resources in California, West Coast Nut, Progressive Crop Consultants, and My Ag Life.
The California Walnut Conference, presented by JCS Marketing, the publisher of West Coast Nut Magazine, in cooperation with the California Walnut Board and UC Cooperative Extension, returns to the Yuba Sutter Fairground in Yuba City, California, on April 7th and 8th. The premier show for the walnut industry has been expanded to 2 days. Jennifer Williams is the Marketing Director of U.S. Branding and Food Innovations at the California Walnut Board and Commission. She's excited about the conference's expansion and the opportunities this will provide for attendees, as well as the board.
It's really for anyone in the walnut industry looking to stay on top of the latest in everything that's going on in production research, go out to see all the latest in farming equipment, and hear from all of our different trade show people on the latest going on in the industry. The California Walnut Board is, you know, very excited to be part of this with JCS Marketing. We like to engage directly with our growers, answering questions, giving information on our activities, from marketing to production research, from advocacy to health communications.
The conference is an opportunity for walnut growers to strengthen their connection to the larger walnut growing community and to learn of new opportunities to succeed in the walnut industry. The conference will offer an industry lunch and a number of continuing education workshops and seminars, which include 7.5 DPR hours, 9.5 CCA hours, and 2 CDFA FREP hours. Topics covered include a walnut husk fly panel, the future of pesticides in walnuts, and walnut mold management, among others. Additionally, California Walnut Board staff and invited guests will lead workshops on marketing and industry-related topics important to the success of the industry.
What we're doing to advance the retail industry, on emerging markets on the international front, some of the global challenges we face, as well as social media and what we're doing to reach the next generation of consumers. We'll also have sessions on health research and how we're using all of that lovely research to communicate and educate our consumers, as well as post-harvest research, what we're doing after the walnuts are harvested and what we do with all of that material afterwards. So there's a lot of information going on from people way smarter than me on topics that concern best practices in the orchard, as well as, like I said, lots of really fun trade show booths to look at to get new information. We also have our State of the Industry address, and that will be a panel of three of our prominent board members, Mr. Bill Crane, Mr. Bill Carrier, and Mr. John Aguiar. And they will be talking about all of the things going on in the industry. It's a definite not to miss session.
Two important focus areas for the California Walnut Board are market development and production and post-harvest research.
So the California Walnut Board investment in production research results in continuous improvements to ensure the industry is really maximizing opportunities, solving today's challenges, as well as preparing for the future. This continued investment helps maintain competitiveness in walnut production and processing, as well as supporting applied projects that directly benefit immediate grower needs. And at the conference, growers can hear from UC farm advisors who are doing important field studies on these very programs.
Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the California Walnut Conference hasn't been held in person since 2020. Jennifer expects that growers will enjoy being able to meet in person again.
I think this is going to be a really exciting year. As I mentioned, we've expanded to 2 days. The last time we met was in January of 2020. So this will be coming back after the pandemic. And I think it's going to be exciting because people are anxious to get back out and see each other again. So there will definitely be a buzz and an energy in the room. And like I said, with 2 days, it's jam-packed. We had to expand it to 2 days because there was just so much information to provide to the industry. So both days are going to be incredible. There's credits. You need continuing education credits. There will be credits both days. So I highly recommend that you plan to attend both days of the event.
The conference is scheduled for 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Thursday, April 7th, and 7 a.m. to noon, Friday, April 8th. For more information, visit wcngg.com/California-Walnut-Conference. For My Ag Life, I'm Patrick Cotter.
sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
And analysts are looking at signs that could signal food security challenges across parts of the world resulting from Russia's invasion of Ukraine. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
Former USDA Chief Economist Joe Glauber's tenure at the department included times that noted food security concerns in parts of the globe, from events such as the recession of 2007-2008. Yet when it comes to potential impacts resulting from the Russian invasion of Ukraine,
this feels a lot different.
Glauber, speaking at a recent Farm Foundation forum, says nations are considering how important an export commodity might be from both a consumption and income impact.
Because in some cases, actually higher grain prices are going to help farmers within that country. And we've seen that certainly in prior episodes like 2010, 11, or 2007, 8. We actually saw some areas farm income actually going up in parts of the developing world.
He adds, unlike past events where the U.S. dollar was weak during times of high commodity prices, the dollar is currently strong overseas, even with increasing prices for farm goods.
If you're a country that buying in dollars using your local currencies, and your currency has weakened substantially with the dollar, it's gone up even more.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Despite a lack of willingness in Congress last year to go along with his tax proposals, President Joe Biden's budget proposal for fiscal year 2023 again calls for raising the corporate tax rate to 28% and imposing special taxes on high-income taxpayers. Overall, the White House proposes a $5.8 trillion budget for fiscal year 2023, with USDA's total budget outlays at $261 billion, about the same overall cost as 2022. The White House proposes a $4.2 billion increase in a discretionary budget for USDA that is offset by lower mandatory spending forecasts. The budget maintains several tax changes that failed to move in the U.S. Senate last year, including a proposal to raise the corporate tax rate from 21 to 28%. The White House also proposes a minimum 20% tax on households with more than $100 million a year in income. Biden's budget proposal could become more complicated if it does not pass before the midterm elections, with forecasts that the Republicans are expected to take control of the House of Representatives. That would likely shelve most of Biden's plans involving areas such as taxes, renewable energy, and climate change. The White House forecasts the deficit will be $1.3 trillion lower than 2022, due in part to the end of major spending initiatives passed by Congress to help aid people through the pandemic. Much of that funding has run its course. Given the level of security challenges with the war in Ukraine, the budget would boost defense spending by $69.3 billion and add another $6.9 billion to a North Atlantic Treaty Organization initiative. To address some of these supply chain problems that have plagued the country, the president proposes spending $230 million for ports and boosts the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund by $1.7 billion. While there are global worries about food security, the overall White House budget highlights $10 billion to respond to global conflict and natural disasters. But the budget does not reflect a significant boost in international food aid. USDA's PL480 Food for Peace program is budgeted at $1.74 billion for 2023, the same as 2022, which is about $800 million lower than 2021. The State Department, which plays a significant role in food aid, is proposing $1 billion for a bilateral agriculture and food security program to help deal with global food security. And new data from USDA's Economic Research Service shows restaurant transactions fell 47% in 2020 compared to 2019. In March of 2020, the federal government declared a national emergency in response to the coronavirus pandemic. In response, many state and local governments implemented social distancing measures, stay-at-home orders, and a mandatory closure of businesses in high-risk industries. Restaurants were often included in these mandates, which forced many to close their dining rooms, if not the entire business, sharply reducing restaurant visits across the country. During the first full week after the national emergency declaration, there were 37% fewer restaurant transactions in the same week in 2019. The largest year-to-year changes occurred 3 weeks later, with the 47% decline. By the end of the year, weekly transactions remained 11% lower than they had been in 2019. USDA's Economic Research Service released the new data as part of its COVID-19 working paper examining food away from home spending. New data released by the Plant-Based Foods Association and others show U.S. retail sales of plant-based foods grew 6.2% in 2021 over a record year of growth in 2020. The total plant-based market value reached an all-time high of $7.4 billion. Overall, the Plant-Based Foods Association says plant-based food retail sales grew three times faster than total food sales, with most plant-based categories outpacing their conventional counterparts. Plant-based milk imitation product dollar sales grew 4% and 33% in the past 3 years to reach $2.6 billion. After record growth in years prior, 2021 plant-based meat imitation product dollar sales remained strong, delivering a repeat year of $1.4 billion in sales and growing 74% in the past 3 years. Plant-based burgers continue to lead the plant-based meat category as the top-selling product type. The fastest-growing plant-based meat product types in 2021 were plant-based meatballs, chicken nuggets, tenders, and cutlets, as well as deli slices. Washington Ag Groups are standing with U.S. Representative Dan Newhouse and other congressional colleagues in asking the Environmental Protection Agency and the president to leave the current waters of the U.S. rules in place.
I was very happy to lead a group of lawmakers just recently. We had over 200 signatures on a letter asking the Biden administration to stop the process of moving back to the WOTUS regulations from the Obama era.
The current regulations, Newhouse says, are possible to navigate.
Keep in place the previous administration, the Trump administration's rules that we currently have that provide much more certainty to landowners, to communities, to industries around the country.
Newhouse says if they change them back, WOTUS policies would become some of the most dangerous, far-reaching over-regulatory efforts that the country has ever seen.
Some of the states in the country are talking about, and Washington State is no different, but would have up to 90% of their agricultural land under federal regulation because of this overreach of the Biden administration.
And Newhouse says there's almost no going back.
You know how long it takes to get a decision out of the federal government. Farmers have to be able to have the certainty of being able to make the decisions that allow them to be profitable.
Again, U.S. Representative Dan Newhouse, a Washington State Republican.
California is the ninth largest potato producing state and is the nation's largest producer of spring potatoes, with the majority of these coming from Kern County. Sustained potato production faces several constraints, however, such as variable environmental conditions, pest problems, and market niches, requiring the development of cultivars that are either widely adapted to the region or suitable for specific production areas or markets. Therefore, it's crucial to address the unique needs of the potato industry through sustained development and evaluation of new cultivars to combat these biotic and abiotic stressors.
Those could be environmental factors such as drought, as you know, like we are already facing it, temperature, sometimes the frost injury, and there might be some physiological disorders like bruising after harvest or at harvest and hollow heart. So those are kind of the biotic things. And then there are other factors which are like kind of biotic. And with that, I mean insect pests and diseases. And there are several insect pests such as aphids, psyllids, and worms that could be damaging to the potato production. And when I talk about diseases, it could begin after planting, just like seed piece decay or seed rot. And there are other in-season diseases like scab, which could be powdery scab or the common scab. Then there are two blights, early blight or late blight. And then later in the season, when the heat picks up and then the weather is warm along with irrigation, it could be southern blight and also the bacterial soft rot. So those are some of the challenges that are consistently being problematic for the potato industry.
That was Jaspreet Sidhu, UCCE Vegetable Crops Farm Advisor for Kern County. She said that it is crucial to address the unique needs of the potato industry through sustained development and evaluation of these new cultivars.
One of the things that these developing varieties address is these unique challenges is to improve their resistance against diseases and pests, and also to have increased yields. And also, and their adaptability to the changing weather or the environmental conditions. Just to summarize, the overall goal to develop these new cultivars is to develop cultivars with improved high yield quality, increased pest and disease resistance, so that the producers remain competitive in the market and they are able to cater to their consumers' needs and demands.
Although California is a major producer of fresh market potatoes, the state currently lacks an organized statewide potato breeding program to accommodate the needs of California potato growers. Therefore, the California potato industry works closely with USDA and the Southwest, Colorado, Texas, and California, and Western regional programs for potato variety development and evaluation. The project Sidhu is working on provides an opportunity for growers and breeders to see the importance, aka improved yields, quality, and resistance, of new varieties under commercial growing conditions in Kern County, because the growing conditions there are significantly different compared to other potato growing regions in the United States. The overall aim of the project is to evaluate the adaptability of these new varieties to Southern California growing conditions for improved yields and quality, and to determine if any of the new varieties have improved resistance to common diseases, insects, or environmental stress.
For this Kern County trial, this trial has three subparts or sub-trials, which is the Southwest Regional Trial, the Kern County Variety Trial, and the Observational Trial. So for the Southwest, we get varieties from both Colorado State and Texas State, which is part of our agreement with them to help the potato industry in California. And for the Kern County trial, we use those varieties in the replicated trial, which have performed better in the observational trial or based on their performance in the Southwest trial. For the observational, we include the varieties which have like little or no data from the Southern California or the California growing conditions. So we test those varieties in the observational trial. And if any of those varieties perform consistently better or good for like a couple of years in the observational trial, we move it into the Kern County replicated trial. And in the Kern County replicated trial, we test that variety for 2 to 3 years based on its performance. And if it's consistent, then it comes to the growers to see like if they want to embrace it or not.
In the Kern County replicated trial, varieties Serrata, Primabel, Almera, and Nectar showed good potential with high yields and tuber appearance. Serrata is a high-yielding, medium-late maturing fresh market variety with red-skinned, white flesh, oval-shaped tubers that has good resistance against common scab. Primabel is an early maturing fresh market variety and has very attractive blight, smooth oval tubers with light yellow skin and light yellow flesh. Almera emerged as one of the best varieties in the trial with a high yield and distinctive tuber appearance. This variety is suitable for the fresh market as well as the processing industry. And Nectar is an early main crop yellow flesh variety producing medium to large oval-long tubers and is excellent for both the fresh market and packing sector. The observational trials also showed several outstanding performers for yield and quality.
In the observational trial, we had like a variety which I found very interesting and it performed good. And it is supposedly having some drought tolerance. So I'm very much interested in looking at that variety again this year. And then we have another variety, Torino, which is from a private breeder, I think from the East Coast. And it also performed really good in the trial. So we will be testing those varieties into the replicated trial in 2022. And then from there on, we will see if they're consistent and then we'll get to see their adaptability as well.
While some of the varieties in the Kern County replicated trial still need to go through additional testing before they hit the commercial market, some of the private sector varieties observed in the observational trials are already available.
Some of the varieties that we are getting from the private breeders, they're already in the market, or they have enough seed that it's been grown in some other states or other countries, maybe like in Canada. So those are the ones that are already there. The seed could be generated. But for some of them, which are coming from Colorado or Texas, since they're still numbered lines, it might take anywhere from 3 to 5 years to generate seed and to have them growing in the commercial conditions. Because for that, since they're still numbered, they have to go through tissue culture, then micropropagation, and then certified seed growers will produce enough seed depending on the grower's demands, and that's when it is commercialized. And there's a whole lot another process behind, like registration, patents, and everything for the variety. But anywhere between 3 to 5 years is a good estimate.
This is Taylor Charlstrom reporting for My Ag Life.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.